The following podcast contains strong language and is not suitable for young listeners or workplace environments.
Twilight Imperium and alcohol do mix.
You're listening to FatCast. We've upped our game. Up yours.
Welcome to a very special episode of the FatCast. This is the WBC episode where Matt Loader goes to the World Board Gaming Championship and learns some valuable lessons on friends, family, and the value of profanity. WBC is a big gathering, isn't it, Matt?
The WBC is a gaming convention in beautiful Lancaster, Pennsylvania, held at the lovely and fabulous...
illustrious...
Lancaster Host Resort. Emphasis on the resort. It gets about 2,000 attendees every year, something like that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. A bunch of people. There's a lot of big guys, so they count double, right?
You're right.
So take that, Gen Con. It's got a lot of tournaments, a lot of people playing stuff to win very seriously and quietly. And fuck those guys. So we tend to spend most of our time in the open gaming. You don't have to drive anywhere because you're at a resort, so you can do a lot of drinking and play a lot of games. You might get scolded for being too profane at midnight.
There are crazy hat guys there.
There are definitely crazy hat guys.
Every convention needs at least one.
Yeah, because then you're like, well, I'm at a gaming convention, but it could be worse, right?
Yep. You think, I might see Godzilla slippers, but then you're like, ah, shit, there's Godzilla slippers.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. But, you know, as much as I'll make fun of people, more power to people being themselves and doing what they want and having a good time. So let that freak flag fly. I'm all about it, as much fun as I might make of you. But feel free to make fun of me and my... I was wearing ridiculous tank tops again. So, mm-hmm. You know, nice. we all got our things.
Yep.
So good for them. We... played a shit ton of games. I talked to a bunch of awesome people. We have some sweet designer interviews with people who are way more serious and adult than I deserve to talk to. People like Rick Young, who made me feel like a child when we played a children's game together before the interview. Played a rousing game of 2x2, the competing Noah's Ark game.
That sounds serious.
Yeah. And well, we're all idiots, and Rick Young just smashed us.
Nice.
Really, really hard, actually.
World's greatest 2x2 player.
Yeah, I think we can say that, because it was at the World Board Game Championship, and I'm pretty sure it was the only time the game got played.
Yeah.
That was the final. And kudos to Rick Young for being the world champion 2x2 player. So good job on that. So we're going to jump right into the interviews here, because that's what you came for. You don't want to listen to me talk too much.
Here's Matt interviewing Torben Sherwood from Valley Games. Sure that Torben's going to regret most of these things that he says once he hears it in a sober state of mind.
All right, so the first thing, we're going to jump right into some serious shit here, is that leading up to this interview, Torben, I mentioned that tomorrow I would be playing 90s R&B in the dealer hall, and Torben said, maybe we'll have some cool in the gang. So I just want to point out that Canada is, what, 25 years behind?
We might be.
Behind the ball.
I was just
there.
Trying to get into the Amish theme of things, okay?
The Amish theme. Yeah. So it's like, I don't even know how to insult the Amish appropriately, so.
Well, you know, if you ever walk by and you see a guy with his arm up a horse's butt, that's a mechanic.
Good thing the Amish are not going to listen to our fucking podcast, at least. So you know, he said, fuck the Amish, right? What are you going to do about it, Amish guy? You ain't even going to hear this.
Yeah, you never know. There might be that one guy. And that one guy is the one guy that's inspired to come and hunt you down.
So we are here with Torben from Valley Games. Good dude. We spent a lot of time together last WBC.
Yep.
Our booths were next to each other. he's looks pretty drunk.
Oh, I do.
Well, I'm obviously, you know, these interviews are getting better and better as we progress through the evening.
Are you still drinking American beer, though? Well, that's the problem.
I don't even know what the fuck this is.
So you need like 100 of them to even feel it.
Bring me something over here.
They don't have Canadian beer here.
Nobody talks for free.
Yeah, the last guy brought scotch. That was a good
idea. Yeah, and apparently that was really expensive.
18-year-old McClellan? Yeah, it's not bad.
It's like $150 a bottle or something.
No, it's not that expensive.
That's what somebody told me.
Really?
Yeah.
No, it's not that expensive.
Well, I don't know. Maybe in Canada they get cheap scotch.
Yeah, we do get better
cheap
things.
Cheap scotch and shitty 70s music in the 90s.
Apparently, yeah, 70s music in the 90s. It could be like, well, Germany and some of the other countries in the EU, they get the movies like, what, 2 years, 3 years later, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know.
Maybe that's what happens.
So number one, like, serious question here.
Okay.
What's hot? What's on the agenda? What do we care about? I mean, Titan, Hannibal, everybody's excited about that, you know, because we're, you know, this is the Fortress Mare trash. To be honest, we don't really give a shit about Stronghold. No. I know you guys like it, but...
You don't like it?
I played it. Fuck that game. I'm sorry.
What do you mean? It's too long?
No, it's too bullshit, right? How can you make a game about orcs and goblins attacking a castle?
There was
so unexciting.
Pretty famous movie about that. I'm just trying to think of what it's called.
I can see that you can make it, but the movie isn't boring. The movie was, you know.
Well, I'll tell you the honest truth. It's done really well.
And I don't mean to shit on your game.
No,
but I'm a fucking asshole, aren't I? I invite you to come on the show, and I'm like, so by the way, question one, fuck your shit.
I don't like it.
No, but what I mean is that I can see why people don't like, you know, like I played it, and of like, you know, the cube ass pushing, you know, mathy shit, it's solid, it's good, it's as good as any of those other things, you know, it's...
Yeah.
And you know what? Der Spickerstad outsold the fuck out of, you
apparently.
Know, Roadkill Rally.
Yeah,
so,
apparently.
Yeah,
yeah,
so, you know what? Like, that's awesome. I mean, and I understand, like, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah. And that's going to be
I just personally don't give a fuck about it.
Well, you like Beat Beat, which is
Beat Beat. That's a fucking classic of the Valley Games catalog.
Other people's opinion of other things. I mean, it's quick, it's fast, whatever.
I'll tell you what, those Stronghold players aren't buying Beat Beat.
not many. And it's long, and it's involved, and sometimes they can't understand that the one side, you're going to lose, or you're going to die.
That's the other thing that rubbed me really the wrong way, is that it was that I knew I was like, well, I'm going to fucking destroy this castle. Like, I fucking win. I'm a goblin, and I destroyed the castle.
But you didn't do it fast enough, so you lose.
Yeah, but I didn't eat enough people. Like, get the fuck out of here. I win. I fucking destroyed your castle. But, no, I mean, it's the one thing that I have to say about you guys, right, is that even a shitty game like Stronghold, you guys come correct with the productions, especially the reprints, you know, Titan, like, people, you're doing what people want, you know, you're
they weren't without problems too,
well,
right?
So we could talk, if you want to talk about it, I was going to try to be like, I just shit all over your new game, so I was going to try to be polite, but.
How about being honest, though? I mean, the honesty of it is that not everybody's without problems, right?
And what we always joked about with you guys, not joked, but I mean, when we were talking about with you guys after the convention, and we talk about it, it's just like, we feel fucking terrible for you guys, because you're like the nicest dudes, the best intentions, and you're just getting fucked left and right, and you're just like, you know, and you try to do good thing, you try to do this, you try to do that, and it's like, fuck, we can only do so much.
Yeah, and that's it. You only do so much, and when stuff doesn't go right for you, you kind of have to bounce back.
But then five basement-dwelling troglodytes on the internet make a big fucking fuss over, you know, a free bonus that you're trying to fit. You know, you do whatever, and it's like, what are you going to do about it? You know, it's like...
And again, it's only five, right? Or, you know, a couple of guys that imitate themselves as other people and come on and do
things.
I don't
know if you talk hard numbers, right? How many copies of Titan did you guys sell?
9,000.
Right, so how many dudes emailed you to bitch about something?
Yeah, maybe a couple dozen.
Yeah,
right?
So there it is right there. You know, I mean, it's that squeaky wheel gets the grease.
And then that's exactly it. So we look at that and go, there are only a few of them, and they're usually, when you look at them, it's the same people complaining, and that's fine. They have every intention to do that, and they have every right to do whatever
they want.
You've
got to be diplomatic, but I'm going to say fuck those guys on your behalf.
Oh, well, that's very nice. I'm not going to condone it, but, you know, at the end of it, it's one of those things that it's part of the industry, right? And people are going to complain, and if they're given a public forum...
If you fucking shit solid gold bricks in every copy of Titan, somebody would complain that they weren't big enough.
Perhaps.
You know, like...
Yeah, it's perhaps.
Like,
but whatever. We move on, and we're able to get a few more things out there, and we're happy about that, and... Yeah, some do great, some don't, but lots of publishers have the same issue, right?
Yeah, yeah, so. No, exactly. I mean, Zev had issues with stuff. You know, everybody, Fantasy Flight, I mean, everybody, shit happens. It's, you know, like,
it's how well you can respond, and everybody else sees how well you respond. And so we keep putting out good titles, and we're putting out, you know, quality bits. And
I saw a dude complain on the internet the other day.
Oh, yeah?
That a rule book he got from you guys had rusted staples.
I see.
Yeah. What? Fuck you, guy. Fuck you. It's like a $70 game, all this other shit. Rusty staples? Like, come on. Like, well, get it the fuck together. You're a grown man.
He can email me anytime, and I will try and
respond. You're a fucking adult. Like, this is not reasonable.
You're really trying hard to keep it together
right here. He's drunk, and I'm fucking... You thought I was
gonna... not sure. He's a completely reasonable man if he's purchasing our product. Shut up,
Lauder. But no, so moving on. So two things, right? These tie in together, right?
Yeah.
You guys started out really very heavily on the reprints, the classic stuff, which you're still doing. You still got stuff like that in the pipeline.
Still got Q-Line.
And I think it's fucking great.
Yeah.
But you're also sort of branching out into more original stuff.
Yeah.
Which is also great. So like what do I give a fuck about that's coming out from Valley Games in the next, you know, 6 months, a year, whatever? Horizon.
We got a couple of great things in the hopper. There's the Hannibal reprint, or the Hannibal expansion, which is called Hamilcar.
Oh, I don't know shit about that.
Yeah, yeah. So
fucking
we've got a pre-order up for that right now, and we're waiting for people to keep signing up for that. More and more the merrier, and we'll get that out. There's D-Day Dice. We announced that the other day.
I think we talked about that like a long time ago as a very abstract like maybe concept. Maybe I'm making that up.
No, you are.
Okay.
This was pretty much brand new. It was a print and play game that was out for a little bit, and then we signed the title from the gentleman. We're gonna try and we're gonna put that up on Kickstarter. Get that a try.
Oh, dude, you're fucking pushing me off the edge with the Kickstarter. You're a real company. Act like an adult company now. I gotta pick on you.
We can't do it everything, right? So we got all these things to do, and we can't do it all. So the actual designer wants to give it a try on Kickstarter. He's got a whole bunch of great promo stuff that he wants to
add. You know what you guys should do? You should pick up OMG. There's an axe in my head.
OMG, there's an axe in my
game.
Head.
That's a game. Yeah, check it out, man.
Is it not a Steve Jackson title?
No, it's like an adult game for like real people.
Oh. Most of his stuff sort of has that idea. I could see like John Kovalich doing all the artwork for it, and OMG, there's
tell me about the dice game, though. I like dice games a lot. Like, what is?
It's
is
like
it
a World War II scenarios, a bunch of them.
So we got some theme, right? So what are you doing? You're rolling different dice for different kind of
The multiplayer game, co-op, we're all trying to storm the beach or storm the bunker, and you're trying to work your way up through different levels, and it gets harder and harder. And
so
you
like
get
a pyramid, almost like a pyramid dice game in that sense.
Yeah, kind of. It goes up in tiers and levels. It gets harder to progress, but
you're getting more shit as you go.
Finding things. You're earning courage.
That's clever.
Finding
courage,
specialists.
Yeah, what the fuck? You're not getting like.
Well, you won't go to the next level. You don't have any courage. So if your unit's sitting back there cowering, they're not going to have any chance. But the great thing about the game is, it seems easy, and one guy may excel. But if one guy dies, the whole thing's pooched. So you gotta bail. So you're all done.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, right?
Yeah, I love dice games, man.
Lots of expansion opportunities for it. So it's, I mean, like every war game, there's lots of opportunities.
What, you guys found that Fantasy Flight Games cash cow?
don't I wish.
Well, make sure you fuck up the rule book then.
Roger. Yeah, okay. We'll get right on that. It's not like we haven't done that before.
So what other stuff? You got other stuff in the pipeline that you're allowed to talk about yet?
There's a couple of other expansions for things like Days of Steam. There's another expansion in the works.
Stronghold's
got two more expansions in the works.
Wow.
I know. Yeah. there's a Hamilcar expansion. There's
No, you know what? So you definitely don't know him, but many of our listeners are familiar with Mr. Will Kenyon, who is, a Twilight Imperium aficionado extraordinaire, right?
Okay.
And big guy on the fort, you know. He doesn't post that much. But, you know, a well-known brand name A-tier,
sure.
You know.
Yep.
And he's the one that fucking made me play Stronghold one time. And, man, I wanted to fucking slap him. But he loves it. He loves it. So, so much as I might shit on the old Stronghold.
See, personally, I think your attention span is less than that.
No.
Yeah.
Twilight Imperium is my favorite game.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Twilight Imperium and Dune, my two favorite games.
So do you play the wait and see, or do you play go get them?
Oh, I play a very strategic Twilight Imperium.
Oh,
actually.
Really?
Yeah, I do very well in the tournaments here.
Nice.
Like, yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm contrary to my typical idiocy when you see me.
I haven't seen the serious side yet, and I don't know if I want to. I like this side more.
So let's talk about Beep for a second, right?
All right.
So I think it's kind of bullshit that Beep got downgraded to a junior level tournament this year.
Yeah, we had 90 people last year, and I don't understand that.
Beep, man, it's because I individually built it up so fucking high that everyone was stoked on Beep. I was there for our epic game of Beep last year. Things were happening. Punches were thrown. Like, it was wild.
I have seen fingers slightly maimed in that game.
No, this was punches across the table.
Oh, is that right?
Full body slam.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
All right. So, thank you, Torben, for stopping by. It was
anytime.
Really good to talk to you. Valley Games, make sure you check out what they got in the pipeline and pick up some of the older titles. Beep, beep, fucking rules. So, get on that.
Thanks, dude.
Okay. Awesome, man.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, I'll see you tomorrow, man. Come hang out at the booth when you're not busy.
So here's Matt and everyone's favorite dad, Sag, interviewing John Paniski, designer of games like Leaping Lemmings and probably some other adult games, too, that I've never played.
All right, so we are here at the WBC with John Paniski. Oh, I'm fucking it up already.
Yeah, but that's a great start to an interview.
It is, right?
Always say 3, 2, 1.
Say it again. It's one of those. John Paniski.
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 Say it with panache.
Panache.
Paniski.
Paniski. Paniski. Got it. That was good. That, John, you are a teacher.
He's done it before.
You are a teacher. So we are here at the WBC with John.
This is how I teach.
Paniski. I fucked up.
Right after that.
Class will come to order.
We're here at the WBC with a fucking moron. And
don't make him choke the scotch. It's too expensive. All right, John Paniski, right?
Okay, is the interview almost over?
It's just, yeah, we only have so much time.
Introduce yourself as well.
I am Sagra Lars, by the way. Thank you very much. All right, we did think right up on in Fortress AT on Lincoln's War. What's changed since then? I see it sitting down on the table downstairs. What's new? And I'm not talking game-wise because, I mean, when is this thing coming out to my table? That's the first question I'm going to ask.
It'd be real nice if I could say it's going to be out by next convention, next August.
Right.
But I'm not real sure that that's the case. It's going to take a lot of support. And because it needs a lot of support, I'm doing everything I can to make people aware of it. So right after the convention, there will be a contest. People will get a view online of what the initial setup for Lincoln's War is.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give them two open card hands. They're going to look at them, and they're going to tell me what their best strategy is to play the Union hand. Between Adam, myself, and Michelle, we'll decide what the best strategy is, and they'll win a free game.
So whoever submits what you think is the best starting strategy for the game,
amen,
is going to win a game.
Yep.
So this is going to require talent, skill, insight, perhaps a historical perspective of some sort.
Yeah, and two or three beers.
Oh, okay. I'm qualified on
so
that.
So I have a chance.
You have a chance.
And we'll make sure we put something on Fortress AT about this, right?
Oh, I think we're absolutely involved as an official sponsor or something like that, right?
Sounds good to me.
We're on the sign or something.
Sure. Yeah.
Right? We are.
We
are
on the sign.
You absolutely are on the sign.
We're about it.
Building
FortressAT.com is like on signage here at World War
II. So jumping back into my area of expertise here, farting rats.
That's my next game.
The Fortress AT crew is definitely way into Leaping Lemmings as a whole. You know, most of us are big fans of that.
Are you really?
Seriously, I love it.
Oh,
I
that's
wrote
cool.
I wrote a great review on there that you obviously
oh,
didn't
no,
read.
No, 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 no. I did read that. I did read that. But I didn't realize that the whole crew was into it.
That's great. I don't know. I can't speak for everyone, but I'd say the overall feeling is a very positive one. A lot of people here that we know are part of the, you know.
It's been positive here at the convention.
Yeah, well, you guys first
and,
year.
And what I like is at all different levels, I mean, from little kids to the doddering elderly.
So I have a question for you. Let's put you on the hot seat real quick here, right?
Does it take memory?
No.
Let me
no.
take another drink.
If you have a move in the game where it is optimal for you to move yourself or something, or you can swing an eagle around and eat 5 lemmings, are you going to take the move that is, you know, a little more optimal for your own victory, or are you going to swing that eagle around and
eat rodents every time?
Exactly. That's what we wanted to hear. Very good.
I passed?
Absolutely.
But you mentioned before when I was telling you about how I enjoy your children's games, like Leaping Lemmings very much, that you had some other stuff in that level. Because we have a good mix, I think, of people that are into the really heavy, more serious war game stuff, like, you know, Hearts and Minds.
It's funny you should say that, because I had a very long conversation with Grant Daglish of Columbia Games. And he's quite interested in a new concept that I've come out with on 1066. It's a series of games, one battle leading into another. During our conversation, I mentioned that I enjoyed family games. He said he wants Columbia to move more into that area. And he looked at some of my designs and was pretty taken with one in particular, which is called Mountain Men. And Mountain Men is looking at the mountain man in America, in the Rockies, and two aspects of his life. Collecting furs, very simple aspect. But after that, they move into what was called a rendezvous. The rendezvous was nothing but a frickin' party. So the first half is collecting furs, getting rich, going to the rendezvous, and then spending all the money and getting drunk.
That sounds really family friendly.
Oh, it is. It's for all, again, all levels.
I think a lot of that fur money was probably spent on...
We don't go into that.
No,
building families.
That isn't a part of the game.
It's a making families game.
It's an optimal rule. Optional. What the rendezvous involves is a series of contests between the players, each of whom is playing a historical character. And they will do things like climb trees, throw axes, and the idea of throwing axes is nothing more than like tiddlywinks, taking an axe and trying to flip it onto a target.
Right.
He loved that.
Who do I need to talk to make this come out soon?
Oh, it's going to come out.
It is awesome, too cool.
Every time a mountain man wins a contest, he's passed a jug. That's like the trophy. But the jug not only is a trophy and gives him points, it also slows him down in the next contest because he's a little tipsy.
So this is like kind of like a dexterity game mixed in with a more... Well, what's the other aspect? You know, what kind of...
It's just pure fun. There's a little bit of strategy to it, but not a whole lot.
So you're talking about the players actually flipping pieces?
Yeah,
or is this?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's one aspect. I started with six contests. I've dropped it to five, and I think I'm going to cut another one. But it ends with a foot race around the board in which the mountain men can pass each other, trip each other, get into fist fights, and sometimes jump off the trail and take a shortcut by swimming down a creek.
Sounds, I'm sold.
Okay, and I mean, earlier you were saying the players are actually flipping things in order to get the action.
Oh, you're stuck on the flipping part.
Do we actually run around the table and take a shortcut?
You know, I hadn't thought about that, but I can add that.
I'm just wondering how on earth you're going to implement that in the
You're games. Moving pieces around a board.
Okay,
The aspect of movement is not dice. I try to steer around dice as much as I can because of the luck aspect. In this case, you have a number of chits with numbers on them.
Right.
And you have... one chit that says trick. So you choose which one you're going to play all at once. So everybody puts one down on the table and reveals them at the same time, and then they move ahead that number. If they do trick, they are able to trip somebody, knock them down, or get into a fight.
Sounds good. Shifting gears to a serious adult game. You mentioned something about Haiti.
Let's talk about Haiti.
Oh, that's something I'm very, very excited about. It's nowhere near passing on to a publisher yet, but the idea is well fleshed out, and I have begun playtesting. It's called Black Eagles, and it is about the slave uprisings in Haiti, that period of history that involves Toussaint Louverture. Toussaint is probably the only individual from Haiti most people know about. But the history is very rich, and it needs to be told in game form because it involves so many countries. The black rebels are known for beating Napoleon, which is pretty impressive in and of itself. But most people don't realize they beat the Spanish back and the English as well as the local French authorities. The game revolves not so much around each person playing a faction, as in many Euro games. It involves each player being a rebel leader, each one trying to rise to the top within the revolution. It involves economy, resource management, and alliances, great deal of alliances. All of the major factions are bid on to be allies of the various rebel leaders, and they will change from time to time. It's a cube game. Each faction is a particular color, and what you're doing is you are bidding men from your faction to give to the various European factions to get them to back you in whatever it is that you're doing.
European bidding cubes is not making my blood boil.
I'm sorry.
As much as,
well, yeah, but don't forget.
Tiddlywinks, I mean, axes.
This is based on a good historic slaughter of people. I mean, there's grounds here, and one of the things I would bring up is, first of all, you're talking multiplayer war game, right?
Yeah, it's what I believe to be a beautiful melding of war game and Euro.
Right, and there's how many multiplayer war games are out there? I mean, you look on the boxes and they say 2-2 or 1-2. So right there, you've already got my vote, because I have trouble getting two-player games to the table because I got to be with three or four people.
And the map. And the map. I showed you the map.
Gorgeous, by the way. I realize you go out there in TV land.
I wish here in public I could tell the world the gentleman's name who made that map. It is just gorgeous. But if you go on to the Black Eagle's site on BGG, okay, you'd be able to find that out, because it is posted.
Yes, and I got a chance to see it yesterday, and it is absolutely gorgeous. The copy I saw is printer ready for a game, as far as I'm concerned. It is magnificent. I mean, it's better quality than most of the stuff you're seeing coming out right now already. Yep. And this is a game that you're still working on. And this guy punched this out as like a labor of love.
Yeah, and it just goes to show that there are people who just the idea has got them going
fired
full
up.
Bore.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And I think particularly in the war game community, that's more true than anybody else, because all of us are like addicts who can't get our stuff. It's the only part of the gaming industry where you'll get a rule book 3 or 4 years before this game is ever going to be ready. So you're sitting there, you're reading this rule book, you're like, man, I never thought of it that way. Oh, that's going to work out neat. I like the way these troops are coming out on the board. And then you sit there and you look at the pre-order numbers moving up 2 or 3 notches a month for the next 36 months, and it just drives you crazy. So people like this guy come along and they see, wow, and presumably he saw the rule set?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's reading the rule set and he's saying, I understand the countries. I imagine he had some level of template to start with other than a map of Haiti. But this guy's sitting there thinking, I want this thing to get going. And there's just this whole different set of energy that goes on with the war game side of things, because so many of these games just take so, so long to come out onto the market. And I kind of hinted on that when I was interviewing you earlier, and I don't want to dwell on that so much, particularly this game. What I think excites me about this game is I'm going to be able to get 3 or 4 players sitting at the board. It's got cut a deal written all over it. I mean, you need to find a way to get people to where you need them to be, and that means that you're going to have to make deals. And frankly, you're going to have to hand power over to your opponents in order to succeed,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And
that's the beautiful part about it.
That's the kind of thing that takes a game from being, rolling the dice and moving your guys 3 pieces to the point where that board is sitting there for 20 minutes while the entire game lifts up off the table and you're discussing how you're going to make this work. And it's that wheel and deal. It's a whole different kind of game.
Now we're back in my wheelhouse. That's what I like to hear.
Well, when you talk about Black Eagles, most people who know anything about the subject know that if yellow fever does not enter into the game, then it's not historical whatsoever, because that was the biggest ally that the Black revolutionaries had. And there is a separate segment of the game every turn in which everybody is going to get hit with yellow fever, but because the Europeans were not as prepared, they take a much bigger hit. So that enters into it as well, and that's messing up everybody's plans.
So there's some chatter in the machine that you've got this attrition that's going on at the beginning of
constantly,
every turn.
Yeah.
So you constantly have to be thinking on your feet and making it work one way or another.
Yep.
I like the sounds of that. That's the one that's got me. I'm really looking forward to Lincoln's
War. Be out on the table next convention, next August. I think by then I'll be ready to pass it on to somebody else.
So you're saying a copy good enough that people could play and you could look at it. Mm-hmm. And if I stole that, I would have the only copy on Earth.
No, you can't steal that because that map is mine.
I got to admit, the map is gorgeous.
But I'll tell you what, with all the help that you've given me, I will give you that map. When the game is
showing the map, okay, and cubes of
everybody has heard that.
So. Done deal. Switching gears a little bit, but not completely. You especially, you talk wargaming history is so important, and you're a history teacher, right?
Yes.
Remembering that correctly. I also a history teacher. Got my first job yesterday.
I didn't know that.
Just started.
Hey, congratulations!
Yes. Yeah, so, how important when you are, how important is the historical accuracy versus making a good game? Are there things that you're willing to sort of obviously you're not going to go totally wrong on some stuff, but there's some things that might be a little bit more, might make a much more compelling game to change or to sort of, swing something around a little bit or gloss over a certain aspect. You mentioned the yellow fever in Haiti. For you, that's a really important historical aspect that's may or may not be really hard to write in as a mechanical feature.
Right.
If it's easy, then that's a bad example. But if it was really difficult to do that, it's really important for you to, for you personally as a designer, to be historically like.
You got a good point because and I was just talking about this with Grant this morning. Being a history teacher, I am constantly struggling with the balance between education and fun. Being a gamer, I want to play a game that's fun, but I do not want to create a game that does not have some measure of education, and most of mine do. There's a couple, like Nuts, that...
Leaping Lemmings is clearly a very
You're absolutely right.
But it doesn't
upper
attempt
level.
It doesn't attempt to recreate, the scientific habits of lemmings. Either,
right.
You know what I mean?
But at the same time, if you look at it closely, it teaches people how to play basic war game techniques.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
But what I was getting at, I don't know. Let me have another drink and we'll figure it out.
the man's thirsty.
The balance between fun and education I struggle with because I always want to get as much information in as possible. The problem is the more education you put into it, the more boring it becomes to a lot of people, particularly hardcore gamers and people who are just getting into gaming. So I don't have to dumb it down. What I have to do is pare it down to the most important information. And even there, I've got to be careful how I couch historical things.
That's sort of the eternal struggle of the history teacher in general is...
To make it interesting.
By the end of the class period.
Exactly. Right. It's just, we're going to talk about this. Let's go back 500 years because that's where this starts. And then really we should go back further than that. And then here's 4,000 different branches of this tree that lead up to this, one.
And you're excited
event.
About it, but nobody else is.
Yeah, exactly. It's,
will this be out in the test?
Everything is important. Everything is a relevant portion. It's how do you boil it down into the essence of what you're trying to get at.
I'll give you a real good example. I was talking with, I forget who it was, but we were having a conversation, the three of us, when I had 1066 out on the map.
Right.
And one of us said something about 1066 being on a test, and that's always the right answer.
Yeah.
Don't know what it means?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a when in doubt, guess 1066.
So that's just it. To know what things happened is really more important than the year itself.
Yeah.
The reason I would like to call that game 1066 is because of the name recognition.
Yeah.
A lot of people really don't know what happened, but they do recognize that particular year.
Yeah.
Getting back to what you said about dealing with particular historical issues, in King Philip's War, the idea of massacre was a very important event all the way through the war. It was constant. And those massacres were pretty horrendous if you read the histories, and even if you don't. I wanted to include that, but I didn't know exactly how to do it in game terms. And then I hit upon the idea that when a massacre occurs, it raises the fear of all of the surrounding area, and it tends to create more militia. So the curious thing about King Philip's War and Massacre is that massacre, when a massacre occurs to you, it's a good thing because it increases your force.
Well, so King Philip's War, actually, that's a good follow-up there, is that was, I guess last year we were talking about it a lot more. It was highly controversial, the subject matter. I mean, Haiti could potentially have some similarly controversial subject matter.
Yeah, I said, if you think they're taken to the streets on King Philip's War, wait till Black Eagles hits.
Yeah, he's got several other islands that he's focusing on as well that could cause trouble.
So,
as a matter of fact, you don't know about this, but I've been working on our invasion of the Philippines following the Spanish-American War.
That's a good one.
And honestly, the reason I'm doing that is because of the horrendous casualties the Filipino people took in that war that nobody knows anything about.
So how important, or how do you, we play games. The argument is it's a game. So you're trivializing, massacres and death and all these, horrific historical events that need to be treated with, important reverence or whatever.
And that's what I'm trying to do.
But some people would say we can't do that in a game, because you're forcing a player, it's like World War II games, like, you're playing the Nazis. No matter how much you're, that's a bridge too far for some people, is that, the idea that you would...
That's a good game.
Listen, war gamer in joke. Thanks,
this
guys.
This is a serious issue, though. No,
thanks, guys. But you know what I mean? It's a really tough thing, and I think it's important for... It seems like it's very important for you that we're talking about this historical event, but, why not write a book about it, right? Why do we have to play a game about it to get these points across? Because games are Monopoly, and that's for fun and relaxing,
right? I tried to get a book published for years and years, and it was much easier to get a game published, so I'll stick with that.
So to some extent, part of your goal is to lift an emotional response. I mean, you're trying to enlighten. You're trying to get people to address that kind of issue.
I never thought about it that way, but yeah, I think you're right. I am. I am trying to raise people's awareness of historical events. I know that I'm not going to get everything exactly right, but if I can get somebody to look at the game, to play the game, and go, damn, I never knew that before,
right,
and go to a library or get on the internet and look something up. And I've had people say that, and that makes me happier than the little cha-ching that I'm getting for it.
Right. Now, are you taking this into the classroom at all?
Absolutely.
In your classroom?
I honestly believe, and I'm pounding my hand on a table, to give emphasis to the fact that games are one of the most important teaching tools that we've got. And teachers who don't realize that and think that that's trivializing education are missing the boat.
Okay. You hear that, teachers? I'm gonna quote this on my first performance
please,
review.
Please do. Please do.
Professor John Paniski told me.
Yes. On my podcast where I didn't really curse that much. He has a teacherly effect. A very teacherly effect on me.
less than most times, at any rate.
I honestly plan on eventually putting together, not a conference, but a talk on how important games are to teaching.
Well, I've noticed on Board Game Geek, if you look around, there's a number of people that have really, pushed like diplomacy. I did a whole lesson plan on, I did a whole unit on international diplomacy, and playing diplomacy was part of that.
Mm-hmm.
As a class, you're learning the idea of like balance of power. You're learning, international relations. When do you backstab? What is the point when there is all this stuff?
And here's the other side to that. You don't have to play the game to get the point across. The graphics are enough. The tactile passing around and holding of these pieces awe the kids. They give credence to the fact that what you're talking about is real. Now, to them, cardboard is real. They can't think in terms of historical people that once lived and breathed, but they can hold the cardboard and they can go, "Oh, what he's saying is true." Doesn't make sense, but it gets the point across.
Well, that's do you have anything else that we want to? John, you were playing Axis and Allies when I came and stole you away. How are you doing?
The Russians are winning.
Yeah. Well, who are you? I didn't see you.
The Russians.
Oh, good job. Good job. Good job.
Very good.
Very good. Awesome. That's thanks a lot for joining us. We're super excited about a lot of different stuff you have coming out. You got stuff coming out for all of us, I think, which is good.
Yeah, I am most excited about Lincoln's War. I'm really, really excited about Lincoln's War.
What's the site we can go to? I mean, we're going to have links on Fortress AT to the contest, I'm thinking. So
absolutely.
Check out the main page of the site.
Yep.
Keep your eyes peeled for have the contest links up.
And keep your eyes open, because once the contest is over, I'm currently in the process of putting together a YouTube video, a four-part YouTube video, explaining the mechanics of Lincoln's War. And it's going to be filmed in my hometown game store. Real cool people, nice Civil War background music. It's going to be professional.
Awesome. Well,
that's good to hear.
We're looking forward to it. Thanks again for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your WBC.
Thank you guys very much.
There it is.
So here I talk with a real adult who I can't believe put up with my shenanigans and wanted to sit down to an interview. It's Rick Young, one of the most brand-name designers in wargaming today. He's done such fine fare as Europe Engulfed, FAB The Bulge, and Leaping Lemmings, the only game of his that I've ever actually played.
All right, so we're here with Rick Young, war game designer extraordinaire, probably one of the most brand name dudes in wargaming design. That's active today, I think. Right? It's not a. Am I kissing up?
I'm feeling kissed up.
So first things first, we got to ask the tough questions. Rick just smashed us at the excellent competing Noah's game 2x2. So when can we expect 4x4, the Rick Young follow-up?
Oh, geez, I don't know. It's a tough game. It looks like a real brutal design. I wouldn't want to touch, I wouldn't want to interfere with that. Kids games are not my shtick. So, I mean, I can play them halfway adequately, but designing them is another matter.
Well, then how would you classify Leaping Lemmings?
Leaping Lemmings is not a kid's game. When John initially envisioned it, it was, and the one he turned into me was a kid's game. It was really simplified. It had maybe 8 movement tiles per clan, and it had 4 special actions, and 2 pages of rules, and it was what he wanted, and John was a creative genius behind the idea of the game. It was totally John to have the game design with lemmings running through the valley to kill themselves and having the eagles overhead, and he had some other ideas that didn't quite make the game, but when he turned it over to me, I took it, and I want to design a game I want to play.
So you wrote a whole extra page of rules.
Well,
there were 2 and you made it 3.
No, it's actually about 8 pages. But yeah, no, I added, a lot more special actions. I added the movement cards and a lot of the mechanics.
I mean, I absolutely love it.
Thank you.
But it's still, it's still a pretty simple game. It's no,
sure.
It's not like Lemmings and Golf.
Sure, but it's not. It's a fun game. It's simple, but it's also, it has war game elements in it.
A lot of people have said they're really excited about it as a sort of like a step into wargaming, where you don't have to think about wargaming because you're learning about zone of control and stacking limits and, hex to hex movement and things like that. Yeah.
Effects. Yeah. It's golden. It's the way a wargamer can get a 1-hour wargaming fix with 6 people.
It's also an incredible way to just be a dick to everyone around
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely, and that's important. That's why I named all of the lemmings.
I will tell you that a former roommate, when it first came out, a friend of ours was living with us, and he had the unfortunate distinction of having a lemming named after himself. There was no way that lemming was ever going to live. No way. It didn't matter. Didn't matter if I could score like 100 points or, 4 lemmings just jumped off the cliff. If I could kill him instead, that happened.
Totally.
So in that train of thought, we asked John, because we interviewed John yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Hypothetical Leaping Lemmings situation. There's a situation where you can, move the eagle so that it is in a position where that it will be impossible for it to hit your nice, juicy lemming of yourself. Or you can swing that eagle around and just destroy like five other lemmings.
Well,
which pick are you going to take?
Well, I'm going to destroy the five lemmings.
Right answer. Good job. John was the same way, and that is. Well, that says a lot.
So, right, there's two ways to play the game. There's the nice way and the bad way. And I'm always playing the bad way.
You mean the fun way. Let's call it what it is, fun way.
You want to have as big a pile as you can in that lemming chow box, or why open the box?
Exactly. The game is not about the way I play it is... I try to play to win, certainly, and I try to get as many of my lemmings to live as possible, but I consider it more a game where I want to get one lemming across the end while everyone else gets zero, right. As opposed to we all want to get, you know, all six or, you know.
And there comes a point in the game where, you know, if you're losing, you have to establish a personal victory condition.
Yeah.
So my personal victory condition is to see that dead pile stacked maybe three high and overflowing the box.
I think it also adds a lot, too, that you have the different thematic, you know, clans, so you can kill all the rich guys or you kill all the hippies. Was that your idea? Was that John's idea?
No, that was my idea.
Yeah, good. That's awesome. What about naming the eagles? Who named the eagles?
I named the eagles.
Steven Jr., I like it.
Yep.
Very good,
yep.
Very good.
I figured I was a little worried about naming it Steven Jr. because you know how Steven is. I was worried, you know, he'd call me in and demand his share of the royalties. But I covered myself in the rule book by clearly stating that nicknaming the eagle Steven Jr. was the idea of the scientist. So I'm off the hook there.
So shifting gears, like what I myself am not a big war gamer. Uh-huh. It's something that I like, but just don't have the time or the, you know, my big thing that I'm looking through giant rule books for is, you know, role playing stuff.
Sure.
But there's enough stuff that I like that, you know, it's something I would say I dabble in.
Okay.
As probably one of the most, you know, respected wargaming guys out there right now, you know what, let's say I bring Leaping Lemmings to a group. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves it.
Yep.
What should my next step be? I mean, where do you see, you know, going from there?
I would recommend, even though I didn't design it, Command & Colors Ancients.
It's a great game.
Yeah,
Richard blew us off for an interview so far, so he's been supposed to come by a few days.
I guess in that case, I shouldn't recommend his game.
So no, so forget him.
No, really.
But no, that is great. Yeah, that's, yeah. I like all this stuff.
From Leaping Lemmings, I would recommend Command & Colors Ancients.
So Ancients is your favorite of the...
Totally my favorite. I love the Ancients game.
What is it about Ancients that you like so much?
What I like about it is that you have to plan, that you have to keep your line together. There's an advantage to keeping your formation intact. There's an advantage to breaking the enemy formation. There's an advantage to having your leaders in a strategic place. It's just the 13 different types of units each have their own flavor, and you can min-max them, you know, learn how to minimize their disadvantages, maximize their advantages. It's awesome. Richard,
so you're jumping into the deep end of the Command & Colors pool.
Yep.
There.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm really lousy at the game if you want to play it for money after the show.
If you want to play, do I want to play for money?
I'm really lousy at it, so if you want to play for money after the show.
After the way you just smoked us at the Ark Animals, I don't know about that. We could play like Twilight Imperium maybe, or you know, something I actually I feel confident at, but
no, I'm not into that.
Serious, too much luck, too much swing.
Twilight Imperium, I liked the game. I had fun. I only played it once because it didn't. The way it ended did not float my boat. I didn't win, so obviously there's a design flaw in it. Somewhere.
Yes, clearly, of course.
Which is why, you know, 2x2 does not have a design flaw because I won. So.
Do you have anything in the pipeline, like anything that you're working on that you're real excited about?
Fab Sicily is the next one to come out for me. That'll be out in December. After that, I am really seriously leaning towards redoing Europe Engulfed.
Really?
Yeah. So redoing it as a simplified game. It'll be a one-map game, maybe one-third the blocks. I would import some of the luck mitigation factors from my Fab series. Assets to absorb losses, the ability for the attacker to abort an attack if it looks really ugly. You know, he doesn't get to roll back, but he only loses a minimal amount. Because with Europe Engulfed, you're rolling so many dice that luck mitigates.
Yeah.
But if I cut back to a smaller game, I need a different way of mitigating luck. And that's what I, you know, thought about and came up with for the Fab Series. So I'm going to do the same thing for Europe and Golf. Make it five turns a year instead of six, fewer blocks. The game will be done in half the time.
Because yeah, that's one of the big things that scares me off of sure. actually jumping into that. Because it's like I look at it and I'm like, oh, yeah. But again, I mean, I guess I'm a Twilight Imperium, you know, super fan too. Yeah. So it's long games yeah. don't scare. Sure. I only have room in my life for so many, you know, weekend games, as it were. Sure. But at least I'm not playing like Case Blue or something, right?
Yeah, that's the next project I want to do.
That sounds awesome.
I'm trying to design games you can play in an evening or the longest, you know, a weekend day, even if you're a slow player.
So approaching, how do you approach games now? I mean, or how do you approach your designs? Are you looking at things that historically, we're talking to John, and John's very much interested in history. You know, like history is his prime thing. What's something that's really interesting to me that then I can tell a story about a game, and then he worries about the game aspect. You know, do you approach, like, this is a conflict I'm interested in, but, you know, I have some game ideas that I want to work on more than the particular conflict, and then, you know, which conflict fits it, or, you know, how are you approaching stuff?
I approach stuff, I try to find a topic I'm interested in that has not been overdone lately, all right, so that there'll be a market for it. Then I approach it by looking at, this game has to have something different than everything else that's been done on this topic. So what's going to be the hook? You know, what's going to get people interested in it? So for Sicily, what I did was I said, okay, so you can pick your own landing sites. You don't have to go with a historical plan. You can, and the Axis can have free deployment beforehand. So that's something different. That's not been done, and it's interesting because it gives replayability into the game. It's not the same game over and over again. This time I'll try Patton's plan. Next time I'll try Montgomery's plan. The time after that, I'll do something in between. You know.
So that leads into like a great segue into the next question. So how do you balance historical accuracy versus, you know, playability, enjoyment, making an interesting game? You know, obviously you're playing, you know, you have to dispense with history to some degree because you're playing a scenario where the wrong side could win, right?
Sure,
so,
sure.
But how much do you look at stretching things to make things more interesting or create a more compelling game situation?
I want the game to have the possibility of producing the historical result. But I am not going to put it down a straight line railroad track forcing the historical result. I'm not going to, more and more I'm trying to avoid exception rules, which, you know, history says this couldn't have happened, so you have to insert an exception rule. I'm trying as hard as I can to make the system take care of those possibilities and avoid the exception rules. Like with the Fab series, you have, there aren't really that many exception rules. The thing is, the events are themselves the exception rules, and you only need them when you draw the event. Mm-hmm. So then you go to the pertinent rule, read the paragraph, and you're good.
So do you think as a designer, you know, you mentioned trying to make games a little shorter and more playable, I guess, yep. is really the thing. So is that, are you finding that as you get older, you design more games or whatever, that playability is becoming more and more of a factor in your designs, that, you know, as everybody, I think, the demographic, well, not even the demographic, but just more people are getting older, having kids, having this, having that, you know, that it's tougher.
It's not that so much. That's not the thought process. The thought process is that I want to design games that I want to play. And the games I want to play now are not the long games.
Yeah.
Right? I want to play games that are short, fun, that involve a lot of decision making, where the decisions are important, that they have a flow through, a carry through. A decision I make on this turn, I'm going to be feeling the effects of it three turns from now, positive or negative. And, you know, and then I can look at it after the game and say, next time I'm going to try it doing this.
So you're making the games that you want to reset up immediately.
Yep.
that is the goal, is that you want somebody to pull those blocks right back out and, you know.
Well, I want the game so that I will do that.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So if I'm hoping that there's enough of an audience out there with the same thought process that I have that wants the same thing.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, right? Because you got to play it 1,000 times when you're developing it, right?
Right.
So it might as well be
fun.
Be awesome.
I might as well have fun while I'm doing it. Exactly.
Awesome. Well, Michael walked away. I mean, I was going to see if he had anything in particular he wanted to ask. You got any in particular questions? I mean, I feel really good.
Cool.
Is there anything else you want to talk about? You're excited about?
What
have you been playing? What's new that you didn't design? Is there anything that you really play that's blowing your mind, exciting you?
I picked up a couple of games here that I'm really interested in learning. They're war games. There's the Normandy Beyond. Gosh, forgetting the name of it. The one Don Greenwood designed. That
You're barking up the wrong tree here. I'm sorry.
Breakout Normandy.
Oh, Breakout Normandy. Yeah. L2 did that.
Yeah. I picked that up.
They sold out of those in like 5 minutes. They're already gone.
Right. I picked up No Retreat, which also sold out in about 5 minutes. And I read the rules to No Retreat. It looks really clever.
That's what I'm like actually looking forward to myself as sort of a you know, baby war gamer. that it's something I can handle.
And I picked up Case Yellow. So those are the three games I picked up here. I'm looking forward to playing them. See how they are.
Awesome. Well, tell us real quick about the Leaping Lemmings tournament, right? Because that was a big success this year.
Yeah.
The first year it happened. And
first year I GM'd it. We had 50 people sign up for it. It was a lot of fun. It was great seeing everyone having fun and asking me to sign their boxes, and it's just awesome.
Do you think there was a change in the vibe, the way people were playing in a tournament setting versus the way, you know, you played at home drinking some beers?
Not until the final.
Was the final like the worst possible game of Leaping Lemmings ever played?
No, the final was a great game of Leaping Lemmings, but everyone was very serious. they were seriously screwing each other bad. So, I mean, the Eagle Child pile was just huge, but it was they were just into every move.
You didn't want to spend any time in the boneyard, right? That's the bone
Eagle
zone.
The line of bones,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, no, that'd be a bad move that game, because everyone was out to just eat lemmings like nobody's business.
That's good. Do you think it came down to just?
I mean, there were clever moves being made. There was a guy who used the boo card to boo somebody into the eagle. There was a combination where eagle moved in and ate one lemming and scattered the other lemming into the blue zone, and then the blue eagle came around and ate that lemming. So, it was good.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. I hope it grows. I think it's a great game.
Yeah.
You like war games, you like AT, you like whatever. I mean, you like family games. It's great, you know, because I think it's a game, too, that lends itself to different levels of play, different styles of play, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
I think you can play it with the kids and have a great time and not, you know, you don't have to be a dick to your kids.
Sure.
you can get together with everybody, you know, with your regular friends and just, you know, brutalize each other, you know, especially if you pull it out. It's short enough, too. You can pull it out after that big event where, you know, somebody really screwed you in that, you know, four-hour event game, and then you get to eat all their dudes, and you feel a little bit better about it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, you know, thanks for talking to us.
Sure,
you know,
fun.
Rick
Thank
Young
you.
Got a lot of stuff on the plate. Check it out. You know, Europe Engulfed is, I mean, if you're into war games, you already know. So, but Leaping Lemmings, pick it up.
Yeah,
looking
absolutely.
Forward to what you got on the plate, or you know, working on, and hopefully we'll see you next year with some more exciting stuff to talk about.
Absolutely.
So,
looking
thanks for coming by.
Thank you. Take care.
So I can't wait to hear this fucking disaster. Here's Matt and Andy in Kuwait. Matt learns about English swearing.
All right, okay. So we're here with Andy, English Andy from Kuwait, and he is here with a special report on the Kuwaiti gaming scene. So, Andy, can you fill us in on what's been going on?
Yeah, it's fucking bollocks. Really? What can I say? The number of people in Kuwait that play games is around about, now I have to do a bit of an average here, but it's round about one-ish.
One-ish.
Yeah, and that would be me.
Don't they have any ancient games? Like, I mean, you know, like whatever. Yeah. They play like chess, but it's like, you know,
the
Mideast chess. No, listen, I'm not trying to be that fucking racist guy. No, I just don't know what it's called.
Why
right?
is it racist to say that Kuwait is in the sand? It's in the fucking sand.
Well, no. What I mean is, don't they have I don't know what it's called, like Kuwaiti chess.
God knows.
There's not like a national game or something.
Why would I know that?
No, you're fucking...
Why? Because I'm not fucking Kuwaiti, am I? What do I know? I've got a shitload of games in my house, and no one fucking plays them apart from me and a cat. That's it. I'm on about a 50-50 win-loss ratio.
So what you're saying is you play with a lot of pussy in Kuwait.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, is my wife listening to this or not?
Is she one of the five?
Not right now.
Well, apparently we only have five listeners, so probably not.
I listened, but it was an hour of my life I need back. I really need that back. Anyway, yeah. So nothing's going on there, so fuck that.
So what has been the highlight of this? How long have you been coming to WBC for?
3 years. This is my third year here.
What's the highlight this year?
The highlight? I would say the highlight is playing Combat Commander for shots and putting Flim Flam under the fucking table.
Yeah. So I get a text from him after this event. First, we go over to the table. He's a fucking mess. He's just a mess.
And you can't remember the last five moves.
So I get a text at about 7:30 p.m. that says, quote, I go sleep.
No. I sleep now.
I sleep now. Do not come into my room.
No, I didn't say don't come into my room. Just I sleep
this
now.
This is becoming urban legend at this point.
Yeah.
I sleep now.
No, that was really excellent. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Well, I get to play like a shitload of games with people I really respect for, you know, the shit they talk on the Fortress and stuff for the whole of the year. It's good fun. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. I've played like loads of Arkham Horror and Combat Commander. Thank you for that. High Frontier, that's good. Great game. Loads of stuff here.
So listen, let's talk about Cosmic Encounter. Because everybody right here at this table has a certain opinion about Cosmic Encounter, and that is that. What is that opinion?
Top shit.
No. It's a great game, but can you put succinctly the. The only appropriate. What do you think about victory conditions and so forth?
Oh yeah.
Let's talk about winning Cosmic Encounter.
Yeah. Well, we think, you know, there are certain things that need to be adjusted out of the rule book.
Correct.
And one of them would be joint victory, right?
Oh, bullshit.
That would be fucking crap. You know, mm-hmm. You can't do that. It's bollocks. You can't do that. You can't have joint winning conditions on a game where you have to grind everyone else into the dust. It's ridiculous. And I say that because myself and Flim Flam were playing a game the other day, and these two guys came in, right? And in one round, there's like four bases, and the guy said to me, okay, should we have a joint victory? I went, no. And he went, why not? Because that's a shit way to play the game. The fuck are you talking about? Yeah, but why won't you accept the joint victory? Because I'm not an asshole, that's why. It's bollocks. You don't play games like that. Cock. So anyway, we continue to play, and to be fair, the guy actually won with a single victory condition at the end. And Flim Flam said to him, so how'd you feel now? And he said, pretty good actually. I never felt like this. And right. He said, I had to play really hard to get the win. I said, right, of course you have to fucking do it. It's the whole point of the fucking game. So, yeah, so it was good. So we made, like, a convert there.
Manor Trash Evangelism.
That's right. Yeah,
Spread the good word.
Spread the...
Even in the game we played last night. Me and Andy were in a game last night, and there was a little talk of some bullshit shared victory.
Yeah.
But you know what? I fucking won it by myself.
Yeah, especially after that guy got up on the chair and held his cock and...
Yeah.
You fuckers. Suck this and all that. Yeah, it was great. He lost badly.
Yeah, he sure did. He didn't even have his power by the end. That's how badly he lost. Yeah.
He was whinging to us about an hour ago, saying, yeah, I got into a bit of an attitude after that. Fuck you. If you're going to stand up on the chair and hold your cock and wave it amongst everyone, I've got to fucking win. What do you expect? You know, also, I should emphasize, this was 4 o'clock in the morning.
It was rough. It was rough. So, yeah, that indicates that when I got up, I got back to the hotel room at like 5, and I had to start working pretty early this morning. Yeah. So my podcasting is especially great this evening.
Yeah.
Really professional.
But I have to emphasize to people, you know, I come maybe the furthest that anyone comes for WBC.
Well, you're on, like, literally almost the other side of the fucking world, right?
Right. And I'm not sure anyone comes any further than this. Maybe Maybe
oh, there's
Japan,
a dude from
I'm not
Japan.
Sure.
Yeah,
from Japan.
I was going to say Japan. Dude's a fucking, okay. No, that dude's a fucking animal, a titan.
Titan, yeah.
Right, right. That's
yeah,
probably the furthest.
You talk to him,
actually.
He's nice. He's a nice guy.
But it's the only one I would go to because it's not vendor orientated.
Well, let's
you know
not,
what I mean?
Well, let's not get wild okay. there, Andy.
Let's not talk ill of our vendors, our valued
from
vendors.
These assholes, right. Yeah, the point is, if you go to Gen Con and you're going to Origin and stuff, you know, you're basically going to a big commercial convention.
It's a fucking ad.
Sure, right? Yeah?
You're going to an ad.
You're going to a big advertisement. Right, exactly. If you come here, you come into game. And you're a Ameritrash person, you come into game until 4 o'clock in the fucking morning, and that's it. You know, there is no choice about it, really.
Yeah,
and that's what I really like about
it. Well, what did we just play?
I know, some game where you had to have a card stuck on your head. You know?
Yeah.
What is that? That
was
Coyote.
That was not a game, it was a drinking activity.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, it's a drinking activity.
How well
do
you think
that'd
go
great.
Over? How's that going to go over at Gen Con?
Yeah, right.
Do you have your tickets for the drinking game?
Yeah,
sir?
Excuse me, are you 21?
Sir?
Are you sure? Can I card you? Yeah, it's bullshit, really. You need to... It's really a good time here, you know. I mean, okay, my history is... I'm a wargamer, you know, from SPI times and stuff like that. But I come over here and I don't play very many war games because, you know, I have to concentrate. And it's hard, you know, and you would know that, right, right. Flim Flam, from after you've drunk a bottle of whiskey, it's right. hard to play an SPI war game. Right?
Legitimately
oh,
over
legitimately
that bottle.
Difficult.
Breakout
that
Normandy
bottle.
Tournament. You see, if we did Breakout Normandy
right.
with shots for losses, I'd win. I have to know, even against the Sharks, I would win. Because those guys lose 20 units like this,
right.
you know. That's a bottle of scotch.
Right.
I can take them down.
Well, I will say that I walked over basically the end of the game, and there was maybe like 3 shots left. Four, no, let's say 5 shots left. And me and you had a few. But, yeah, you guys pretty much finished an entire bottle of scotch in a single game between the two of you.
Would you say Combat Commander's a longish game?
I can't remember.
Right.
Fame,
I think
I can't
the box
remember.
Would say that it would be a shortish game. So just to put it into a time.
Ah, right,
time
yeah.
Span.
It was yes, a couple of hours, right?
Yeah,
a
I'd
couple
say
of
2
hours.
Hours.
Couple of hours, 5
not
shots
that I would
each.
Know.
Yeah, well, it's 5 shots each. It's nothing, really.
Yeah.
It's a warm up for the evening. Well,
right.
for me.
Yeah.
For you, different. But, yeah. Whatever. Yeah, but a really good experience. And
so,
I
want to hear about drinking in Kuwait. That's what I want to hear about.
I'm not sure I can talk
yeah,
about
sure
that.
Can
I? Can I talk
about
that?
About
oh shit! We
are
need to hear
because of the worldwide distribution.
Yeah, fuck all that. We need to hear about. We need to hear about your ordering of the War of the Ring Collector's Edition.
Oh
this
yeah,
is, this is,
the
this
ordering
fun,
of the War
right?
of the Ring Collector's Edition. Yeah. Well, I finally pulled the trigger on the War of the Ring Collector's Edition, which was available in Germany for about $1,000. All in with it, shipped over to
so first of all,
Kuwait.
Andy is way more serious about gaming than you are. So that just get that out of the way.
Yeah.
Continuing
okay.
on.
Right. So I need this shit. It looks good. I can't get it in America for less than $2,500.
Right.
And that's not including shipping, so fuck that. So anyway, get it from Germany. And I'm a little bit worried because the distributor in Germany, you know, I'm calling him up and saying, okay, like, I've sent you $1,000. Have you received the... Because before I made the order, he's sending me an email every day saying, oh, yeah, there's this, and this going on. There's conditions going... Yeah, it's no problem. We can do it for you. It's all going to be okay. Okay, so I send him the money. I say, okay, can you send me an email back to say whether you've got it or not? No reply for 3 days. Eventually sends me an email saying, what are you worried about? You know, it's PayPal. It's all insured and everything. It's $1,000. What are you talking about? Like, why am I not worried? So when did they come and pick up the package? Oh, they'll come and pick up the... Listen, he sent me an email saying, listen, I have lots of customers. I said, yeah, you had a lot of fucking customers before I ordered this. You're emailing me every day before I order this. Now, it's like, well, I've got your money, so I don't give a fuck about you. I'll deal with these other guys, you know? I need to know when these guys pick it up, when it's gone into the system and everything. Anyway, okay. So it gets picked up, it goes into the system. But now I'm getting a bit worried because... When it gets to Kuwait, it gets dumped into the Kuwait Postal Service. And unlike all you fine people...
Organization.
Yeah. Unlike you fine people out in other countries, we don't actually have a postal service. We don't have individual addresses. So it's kind of a bit of a problem when it comes in the country. You don't actually know. So I'm a bit worried about that. Anyway, one morning I get a call and I pick up the mobile phone and some guy's talking to me in Arabic. So I say the usual, like, get lost. No, fuck off. Put the phone down. Anyway, calls again, whittering in Arabic. Because what is it you fucking want? And it's like, blah, blah, blah. And then some other guy comes on and says, hi, you have parcel. Oh, right, okay, sorry, it's the post office. Sorry about that, yeah. I'll definitely be there, yeah, in a couple of hours. So I get over to the post office, and this big-ass box comes up. And if you don't know Lord of the Rings Collector's Edition, you think it's a big box, like a coffin box, like Earth Reborn or something. You're in for a rude awakening, because this is a fucking giant-ass wooden thing. It's huge. And they bring it out, and the guy assesses me, because I'm going to the post office. Is kind of the customs guys are there as well, right? So they say, okay, open the package. So I open the package, and right on the top of this collector's edition thing is a load of runic writing, you know. And the guy
is Elvish.
I'm sorry. I'm going to be technical about this.
Technically, it's the dark speech of Mordor.
Yeah, but isn't it like pretend Elvish or something?
Well, I mean, it's fucking not English. I mean, it's not.
Are we warning?
Yeah, it's like nearly Elvish, right? Anyway, whatever.
Anyway,
he looks at this stuff on here and he says, "What's this?" And I said, "Oh no, it's just like pretend stuff." And he went, "Are you sure?" And I went, "What are you talking about?" And he went, Shaitan, this is Arabic for Satan. Shaitan. And I'm like, no, of course it's not Satan. Fuck, it's like a game. Open box, of course you open the box, it's full of painted miniatures and stuff. And there's cards in there. And for the collector's edition, they're about the same size as kind of traditional tarot cards, you know. So you're looking at these things, what's this? And I'm like, it's nothing, it's like game cards. Show me. So he picks up a card and it says, Galadriel appears in Lorien or whatever. What is this? Oh, yeah, that is a tarot card. No. Anyway, it's like, what is this? I said, it's okay. It's like a game. So I'm going, you know, roll dice. I'm not sure. Puts it down. And at this time, I should emphasize, there are people lining up in the post office and they're putting mats down on the floor because it's 5 minutes to prayer time. So the guys are about to just go away for 15 minutes. But eventually, he brings the imam over, who says, the imam, look at this writing on here in Arabic. And the imam says, oh, it's bullshit, you know, we still don't know. Bring the captain over with spaghetti on his shoulders and stuff, you know. What do you think? Captain says, okay, let him go. And that's it. Half an hour to get this shit through effectively customs in Kuwait. But I have to emphasize, if you haven't got this out there and you like Lord of the Rings, War of the Rings, this is a good kit to get. If you can get it, get it.
And you don't like $2,500 at this point.
No, right. True. So true. $1,000 is one thing.
So they pay teachers pretty fucking good over there in Kuwait, huh?
Yeah, well, of course they pay teachers good. You know, why do you think I'm there? You know, what do you think I'm there on some kind of Médecins Sans Frontières thing?
I don't even know what the fuck that means.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. For the Americans
you're an English speaker too.
Fucking society that everybody knows about throughout the whole world except for you. Everybody else has heard of Médecins Sans Frontières. Apart from you, it means medicine without frontiers.
Well, there you go. You said it in... Yeah.
It's not hard, you know. Sans Frontières.
In real words. You said it in real words. So
in real words. That's just to piss off all the French people who are listening, if there are a lot of French people.
I don't think... they're probably not.
Are there any French people?
There might be some. One of our five listeners is French. Pardon moi.
Oh, don't even go there.
Yeah, so, I mean, apart from that, I'm having a great time. I really like it in the States for the couple of weeks I'm actually here. This is excellent. It's very tiring, but there's a lot of open gaming, and there's a lot of good people here, especially from the Fortress. There's a lot of good people here who know how to game and know, more importantly, know how to have a good time. It's not about the game, folks. It's about the people. The people you play.
I will continue drinking to that.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your drinking that weak-ass beer.
Well, I did. I've been... I'm on antibiotics.
Yeah, last time
so
you alleged...
drinking at all.
It's nothing to do with antibiotics. I told you this before, right? Anyway,
yeah, what are you a Stockton Francon Tontouille? Well, yeah, Frontiers, right. Or whatever. Well,
at least
the
I can speak.
Fuck you, nonsense.
Last
French
time
man.
You were doing your Ameritrash thing, you said you had a bottle of tequila on the table, but instead of that, you got a bottle of weak ass beer
somebody,
on the
somebody
table.
Somebody just gave this to me,
and you're worried about taking shots over there in case I'm you not, go in front of the microphone.
I'm not fucking worried about anything. I did my shots, and I did an extra shot, and then I walked over here and I put on a hell of a fucking show.
Yeah.
I'm entertained.
I'm pretty sure we've run out of interesting things to talk about, so we're gonna thank Andy from Kuwait for stopping by. It's been real. If you see him ever in America,
well,
just
at WBC.
Well, anywhere in America, just give him a drink, and he's one of the best dudes to hang out with.
Yeah. And you guys are the best. Yeah, Fortress, it's the best. Fuck. You fucking guys are great.
High five.
That does it for the first episode of the WBC Fat Cast. On the next episode, you'll hear interviews with Steve Bonacore, Mark H. Walker, Stormseeker, and Carter and Sophia, two world-class Seven Wonders champions.
You've been listening to FatCast. You can find us on the web at fortressat.com.
I like Stone Age about as much as I like, I don't know, shitting a castle.
Have you ever shit a castle?
No. But I could imagine shitting a castle would be less painful than playing fucking, oh my God, I hate Stone Age.